Morning. We want to welcome you all to our hearing room, and a special welcome to students who are here with us. We have students from Newman Catholic School. Would they please stand? Thank you for coming. You may be seated. And we have students from Madison West High School. Would they please stand? Thank you for coming. These students are here with a national award-winning program sponsored by the State Bar of Wisconsin and the Supreme Court. The students are invited to come, and this includes students all over the state. If they decide to come, they're given materials about the case we're about to hear. And they may engage in some activities relating to the case. And then at noon, the students will meet with a justice of this court who's been assigned for the day to meet with the students. It will be done after this case is heard. And the discussion will center on the processes and procedures of the court in hearing cases and deciding cases. The substantive issues will not be discussed. Everyone is invited to join the students for this discussion. If anyone would like a summary of the case we are about to hear, if you'd raise your hand, the marshal will give you a summary. Let me introduce the court to all of you. On my far right is Justice Annette Ziegler. She is the justice with whom the students will meet today. To her left is Justice David Prosser. To my immediate right is Justice Anne Walsh Bradley. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my left is Justice Patrick Crooks. And to his left is Justice Pat Robensack, and on the far left is Justice Michael Gableman. With those introductions made, I'll turn to our second case, 10AP 2900, Wisconsin Dolls, LLC, versus Town of Del Prairie. Arguing on behalf of Wisconsin Dolls will be Attorney Lawrence Beekler, is it? Becker, arguing on behalf of the town of Del Prairie is Mark Hazelbaker, and we'll start with you, Mr. Becker.
I know the court has an adequate understanding of the facts, but I would like to point out several key facts that are relevant to this case. First, this business, Wisconsin Doll, has been licensed by the town of Del Prairie since January of 2005. Thus, there was an initial licensure, and there were four renewals that took place before there was any issue raised by the town with the licensed premises of the Wisconsin Dolls Resort. There have been no issues raised by Del Prairie with regard to any of the operations of Wisconsin Dolls Resort. No question of illegal sales, noise complaints, nuisance, anything like that. The second key point I would like to make is that in this case, the town of Del Prairie attempted to change the license that had previously been granted to Wisconsin Dolls Resort without any effort to comply with what I view as the exclusive remedy specified in Wisconsin Statute Section 125.12. Once a license has been granted, there are only two things that a municipality can do with regard to that license. It can seek to revoke it. It can seek to non-renew it. But in all other respects, those are the only statutory processes. That's important because the record is quite clear that there has been no effort by Del Prairie to comply with the statutory procedures for non-renewal of the existing license of Wisconsin Dolls. This case is a certiorari case. Obviously, if the town of Del Prairie had given written notice, as is required for a non-renewal, to Wisconsin Dolls, I assume it would be in the record. In fact, the only evidence of any contact whatsoever with Wisconsin Dolls Resort was a telephone call that the clerk apparently made that was answered by voicemail. We have no evidence of when that call was made, whether there was any notice actually provided, or more importantly, what kind of issues were presented to the licensee in this phone message that would enable it to understand that the license for its premises was in jeopardy, that it was losing a substantial portion, most of its eight-acre property, from further licensure.
Counsel, in the initial licensure application and the four subsequent renewals, what was the description of the property given to be included within the license, and did it vary from year to year?
Well, the words that have been used in different years are not exactly the same. This work was done by a layperson. In the initial license and in all subsequent years, the application and the renewals were for all 8 acres of this resort.
Does the record disclose how golf courses are typically described in their licensure applications and renewals?
The record does not disclose that, Your Honor. But certainly the point that you raise is an important one. The notion that a golf course is a great example, given the fact that there may be sales of alcohol beverages within the clubhouse. I'm not a golfer myself, but I understand that it's common that there are beverage carts on the golf course that golfers can use. And I would be surprised if a license application is much more than the general license application that there was here. So certainly the question of the specificity of the premises description is one of the issues that is at the heart of this case. Now, there's nothing in the Wisconsin statutes that specifically addresses what the area license can be. The statute simply deals with where alcohol is stored, served, and where sales take place. Certainly doesn't say that it has to be done inside a building. Wisconsin Dolls particularly described its license in that it wished to provide for the opportunity for the consumption of alcohol beverages throughout its resort, the entire 8 acres. So there's no misrepresentation. There's nothing other than an honest representation that this large property, this resort, was purchased with the intention that throughout that property there would be consumption of beverages. The Tavern League, in its amicus brief, has pointed out an Attorney General opinion from 1948 that describes almost precisely the circumstances that are presented in this case. That is, whether a resort holding a Class B alcohol beverage license could have operations and permit serving throughout the area of the resort. The Attorney General at that time said that it did, saying that so long as the entire resort was described in the license and the whole is operated as a contiguous, unified enterprise, all under the control of the licensee, it was permissible that the entire property was included in the license premises so that alcohol sales could occur anywhere in that resort. Now, that was 1948. Obviously, there's been no subsequent case in Wisconsin until this one. There's been no change by the legislature to the terms for licensure. In essence, there is legislative acquiescence, as pointed out by the Tavern League and its amicus, to the idea that licensed premises can, in fact, cover more than just a single building. Now, the second significant issue here is procedural. That is, what the town of Del Prairie did is an attempt to engraft a new procedure onto the Chapter 125 procedures. And that's important because in Section 125.01, the legislature expressly determined that Chapter 125 was intended to be a uniform statewide procedure for production, distribution, and sale of alcohol beverages. So, while it is clear that as to substantive rules, local governments do have the right to adopt additional regulations under Section 125.10. The local government cannot take action to conflict with the express statutory procedures for renewal of the alcohol beverage license. And Del Prairie failed to comply with this express statutory requirement. The procedures are required to be uniform. Wisconsin Dells had obtained its license 5 separate times. Thus, in that period of time, it had acquired, in the words of the U.S. Supreme Court, a legitimate claim of entitlement to renewal of its license. Well, whether we call that a property interest or something else, it is a right to procedural fairness in compliance with the law. Del Prairie has never made any claim that it couldn't have provided a pre-deprivation hearing before non-renewal in the way the statute requires. That is, providing a licensee with written notice that the municipality intends to non-renew that license and provide an opportunity for the licensee to have a full due process hearing before the town board in this case.
Counsel, it's my understanding that the Court of Appeals said that the earlier licenses were void and that they were void because they were not specific in regard to the premises covered. That's obviously important in terms of the ultimate decision by the Court of Appeals supporting the town. How do you respond to that?
Well, I respond by saying that unlike the case the cases that were relied upon by the Court of Appeals, the earlier Williams case and, in effect, the 1907 case that was the basis for Williams, that those cases both involved compliance with express statutory procedures. So in the case of Williams, there was a statutory requirement that notice be published so that the public would have the opportunity to participate in the municipal decision whether to license the business. So it was a statutory violation, something very specific. In the 1907 case, the Treat case, the issue involved what the Supreme Court at that time felt was the necessity under the statute that the licensee pay a full year's license fee, even though the municipality allowed it to pay only a partial year license fee. So again, this was a statutory requirement within the laws as they existed at the time those cases were presented. In this case, rather than statutory rights, we have an after-the-fact determination based not upon a statute, but based rather on the sense that somehow a licensee could not actually want to license the entirety of its property.
Counsel, I'm going to ask you this question and also your opposing counsel the same question. If you were to prevail, what is the narrowest way the court could write this decision?
The narrowest way the court could write the decision mm-hmm. would be to say that when an applicant comes in and seeks a liquor license for the first time, the municipality has every right to examine in great detail what the applicant is seeking. But after it has obtained that license, in many cases, businesses aren't even purchased until the license is in place. Once the applicant becomes a licensee, they have a legitimate right to renewal of their license, all of their license premises, unless they are provided with a due process hearing prior to the action to remove it with written notice to the applicant so the applicant can respond, which is exactly what 125.12 sub 3 requires.
Okay, that's your robust argument. Is that the narrowest way the court can rule in your favor?
I believe it is.
I mean, that's the whole thing.
Well, it's not the whole thing. I think it's very important that the court provide guidance to the clerks on the ground and applicants of what the rules are when you apply for a license. This isn't a situation where lawyers are involved, as in your previous case. These are lay people, clerks. They have training, of course, but they don't necessarily know the specific rules that apply to how specific a premises description in a license application should be.
How do you address the concern when you have this broad 8-acre description? I think it was a concern that the chairman of the board recognized with regard to this 18-year-old juice bar, if I recall correctly, and that really is excluded. I mean, how does that work when you do you have to exclude a minor's relative, the age of drinking? An underage is a better phrase. Underage component. I mean, if you have all 8 acres and you have only an underage 18-year-old plus juice bar, are they there illegally then? How does that work?
The first thing is that the statutes, particularly 125.07, provide a number of exceptions to the rule.
Does this come under one of those exceptions? I didn't
know. No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
No, it
doesn't.
So. But the reality is that while Wisconsin Dells certainly has the right under its license to operate throughout its 8-acre premises, and has, nonetheless, there has to be a practical level of application provided by the court. Again, no one has suggested, number one, that the juice bar was actually opened. Number two, that there were instances where, had there been a juice bar, there was intermingling of those entitled to consume alcohol and those not entitled to consume alcohol at the same time in the same particular location. So if that were to happen, that would be a problem. And clearly, the local government, Del Prairie, would have the right to seek to revoke or non-renew that license if that were actually violated. But it didn't happen. There's no evidence in the record whatsoever that that actually happened. Certainly, when you have 8 acres, it's not illogical that there could be different parts used for different purposes.
Can you educate me on how this typically works? You know, there are a lot of areas over in the Dells, large resorts, Noah's Ark, Kalahari, Chula Vista, a lot of places. Do they need licenses for each place where they serve alcohol? Or what's the typical? Do you have to get an individual license for each place within a resort that serves alcohol? Or typically is the resort, how does it work?
Well, it typically works like this. There is one license that is sought for the particular business. And many communities, not Del Prairie, actually have specific requirements to show graphically where alcohol consumption is taking place. Then the local government can decide, is that appropriate, is that inappropriate, and at the time of initial application, make a decision. So that's typically how it is done. But when you're looking at a resort, and the 1948 Attorney General opinion says exactly this, it's not unlikely or impossible that there could be 2, 3, 4 places where there actually was sale taking place, and certainly more importantly, where consumption is taking place. Because obviously many communities, not Del Prairie apparently, prohibit taking alcohol beverages outside. We don't have that situation here. But that would be part of the operations plan that many municipalities, not Del Prairie, have to assure that there are safe rules for consumption.
Thank you.
Why can't you argue here that the narrowest holding in your favor would be when there's a substantial revision in the location as described in the permit, that substantial revision in location constitutes a non-renewal, and that when there's a non-renewal, you have to follow the procedures in 125 point whatever it is, 12.3. That eliminates due process, because it's the statutory procedure. Whether it's a due process or not, it's not relevant. You're not asking we change the statutory procedure.
Not at all.
All right. And what you're really saying is that this is a, when you change the premise, you're not renewing the original license, right?
Yes. That could be a narrower, legitimate outcome in these circumstances, as long as it was clear that the initial license granted, whatever that was viewed as to the full extent of the license that was originally granted.
Now, I'm assuming, probably because I thought that was in your brief, that the you don't like the Court of Appeals decision, which nobody ever argued, that this is void, because that puts your client in jeopardy of selling liquor without a license for a number of years.
Even Del Perry agrees with that.
Right. No one wants that.
Correct.
So you want a valid, you don't want to go back because no one's going back. So what you want is that, ignore that for the moment and deal with what they did in this particular year as to describing the premise.
Yes.
Now, I described it in terms of substantial revision, which are fighting words, right? So what's a better term than substantial revision?
Well, my first view is and continues to be that the decision in the first place to initially license the business is the right time to have that discussion. That once that happens and we get to renewal, if in fact there is, for example, in the Alberti case, no one was arguing that Alberti had lost the right that it had before, but there, Alberti was seeking to expand to premises that had never been licensed before. This case is almost the opposite. That is, the premises were licensed, and Del Prairie was taking the position that, based on no facts in the record from Wisconsin Dolls, that since it wasn't using the full extent of its license, it could take it away. I would accept the court's view that is a substantial change. I'm not sure where the limits are at the low end. But the point is that there's an investment-backed expectation, once a license has been issued, that the licensee can continue to operate on that basis unless they do something wrong. Clearly, the municipality loses no rights if they did something wrong.
But you want a perpetual license once it's given. I mean, don't you agree that the town can change the license?
I do not.
That's
what
I thought.
It can certainly revoke or non-renew where the applicant or the licensee fails to comply with the statutory rules for licensure. 125.12 sub 4 AG lists all of those reasons, and that's the rules that should be applied here. One of them could have been that they failed to comply with their the licensed premises they already had. But had that been the case, then Del Prairie would have had to non-renew the license in accordance with 125.12 sub 3 before it could take away any rights. That's the difficulty here.
Well, or put another way, what you seem to be arguing is that they non-renewed it for the parts of the 8 acres that were not specified in the most recent license.
That's the licensee always sought to license the entire property from the beginning. All 8 acres, the street address, whatever it was, there was never any action by Wisconsin Dells Resort to narrow the area of its license.
Right. Well, what I'm wondering is, in following up on the Chief Justice's line of inquiry, if that is a way to approach the question of what constitutes substantial. You look at the parts that were not renewed effectively by being omitted from the most recently issued license, and you determine whether those parts excised from the initial license, subsequently renewed for 4 additional times, was substantial.
Well, let me put it this way. If someone buys a piece of property with 8 acres in it, number of buildings, seeks and obtains the right to operate legally within those entire premises, taking away the right to operate anywhere other than one building on the 8 acres is a substantial limitation on those rights. And accordingly, this court should not permit that outcome.
Counsel, this case in part is a statutory interpretation case. The statute involved is 125.26 sub 3. And it indicates that license shall particularly describe the premises for which issued. And premises under 125.02.14M means the area described in a license or permit. Now, here, of course, we don't have a situation where the statute specifically makes reference to it being in the buildings or the actual locations or where it's stored. But the application form that is provided by the Department of Revenue requires that kind of specificity. The Department of Revenue is charged with enforcing these rules and is given rulemaking authority under 125.03. Why shouldn't we be deferring to the Department of Revenue's interpretation of the statutes it's charged to administer? That is, the definition of premises as set forth, I think, in their application form.
I take the position, as has the applicant from day one, that the 8 acres of the resort is specifically the area in which Wisconsin Dells sought licensure for sale for consumption.
Where do you store the liquor?
I believe in at least the main building.
And the application says that describe the building or buildings where alcohol beverages are to be sold and stored. The applicant must include all rooms, including living quarters, if used for the sales, service, and or storage of alcohol beverages and records. So the Department of Revenue, in their application form, is defining it with much greater specificity. Shouldn't we be deferring to their interpretation of premises?
With all due respect, I would disagree with that. The first and most important fact is that it is the town board decision, the original decision, and the 4 renewals that constitutes the basis under which Wisconsin Dells acquired its license. In essence, the town seeks to reverse the hands of time and go back to the circumstances as they originally existed. Secondly, the circumstances here are that Wisconsin Dells Resort did store or serve or permit the consumption throughout the property, so it is not misleading. Now, could there have been more details? Well, Del Prairie didn't ask for more details. If it had in the first year, certainly there could have been more detail. But once the license was granted, taking that right away is a very different issue. The red light's on, so.
May I? I'm just going to ask you a question. Should you prevail, what happens? What's the result of this case for you?
That the prior decisions of the Court of Appeals and the trial court and the town board are overturned, and that Wisconsin Dolls is restored to the right to store, sell, and have consumption throughout its property, its 8-acre resort.
Why shouldn't it go back to the town and see whether you shouldn't have the hearing as the, in effect, it was a non-renewal?
Well, I would argue that the court had its opportunity. We attempted to implement a change in policy without amending its ordinance in this area. I think, in my view, it would be unfair to go back and provide a second kick at the cat for the town board that's already non-renewed without proper notice or a hearing. Mm-hmm. And it would only be appropriate to restore the status quo, that is, with issuance of the original license.
When is your license up again?
It's always up by statute June 30th of each year.
You'd be up again, and if they wanted to reduce your premises, you'd say if you won this case that they'd have to do it as a non-renewal and give you all the benefits of the statutes. Is that right?
That is correct. Every year stands on its own, other than the vested rights or at least procedural rights that the holder of an alcohol beverage license has. However, again, since those were not circumstances at the time of original licensure, certainly there is a concern with imposing new conditions that didn't exist originally. Okay.
Thank you, counsel. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you.
Attorney Mark Hazelbaker, representing the town of Del Prairie.
May it please the court, Attorney Mark Hazelbaker, appearing with me today is my associate, Michael O'Callaghan. I also note that several members of the town board and the town clerk of Del Prairie are here and present to see the proceeding involving their rights. The problem with the position that Wisconsin Dolls is taking in argument today and in their brief is they're viewing alcohol regulation as one and done. If you didn't take the opportunity to impose conditions or restrictions or regulations on an alcohol license at the time that it was issued, too bad. Either you tolerate it or you wait until something happens that gives rise to a ground for non-renewal or revocation and you're done. Now, that's not consistent with the way that the legislature delegated alcohol regulation to the some 1,800 cities, towns, and villages in Wisconsin. I mention that because certainly the state, I would think, wouldn't want to be in the business of handling each one of these licenses. It would require a formidable bureaucracy, and we know that that's not popular these days. What has the legislature done? The legislature said, we're going to allow the municipalities in Wisconsin to issue licenses, and we're going to give them the authority under Section 125.10 to impose additional regulations or rules on licenses. If those regulations or rules may result in the imposition of a penalty, they have to be done by ordinance, otherwise they're done by regulation. What does this mean in practice? Well, in practice, municipalities don't wait for a licensee to get to the point of suspension or revocation before they intervene. Here, it's not in the record, but I'll mention that here in Madison, there have been several bars that have been in trouble, and the city of Madison didn't wait until the situation got so out of hand that there had been so many shootings that they had the grounds to revoke or suspend. They imposed additional conditions on the license.
Counsel, is there anything in the record to indicate that the business here engaged in any kind of misconduct?
No. The decision
permitted any kind of misconduct on its premises?
No, sir, not at all. And the reason why the town acted as it did was to regain control over the future development of this property. Now, Mr. Beckler points to what is really only a theoretical loss. That is, the fact that before the action, Wisconsin Dells had a license that allowed it to serve alcohol where it actually was serving it, but it also gave it the enviable privilege of being able to add new buildings, decide where it was going to serve liquor without any additional input from the town. I will agree with Attorney Beckler's reply brief that particular doesn't mean small. Heaven help us, it doesn't. Particular means reasonable and scaled to the location and circumstances. What do I mean by that? Well, Miller Park is licensed for the service of alcohol. That's not a small area. But the licensure was done thoughtfully, and it adapts to the circumstances. For one, if you've been to Miller Park, you know that they cut off service of alcohol after the seventh inning. There are security guards everywhere. There are people who issue or sell the beer who have training. You know, the point is, it would be one thing to have an eight-acre resort here that has service of alcohol everywhere. And if that were contemplated, conditions could be put in place to make sure that it could be done appropriately. The question was asked, well, what do resorts do when they have multiple service locations? I think Noah's Ark was mentioned. Indeed, Mr. Beckler is correct. One alcohol license covers the property, and the premises are described where alcohol is going to be served, and conditions are imposed. They don't necessarily have to be done by rule. They can be adopted at the time of the license as conditions on the license. We've had other instances, some in communities that Attorney Beckler represents, where during the term of a license, conditions have been imposed to try to salvage a situation.
Are there any limits on your changing the conditions? So, Wisconsin Dells has got all 8 acres. Now you want to change that and limit that. Can you just do it? Do you need cause to do it? What's the authority?
If I were to go the line that you're talking about, which is what is the trigger on a due process hearing, to analogize a contested case type hearing, I would say that if the renewal proposes to deprive a licensee of a previous right that they've already enjoyed, that would trigger a full, if you're going to go that direction. I myself don't agree with that, and I don't agree with it because the right to sell liquor is a privilege in Wisconsin. We've pounded that point in our briefing. I won't get into it, but it's been regarded as a privilege since time immemorial. It is a privilege that flows from the authority of the state. We're not talking about an ordinary business here. We're talking about the right to sell alcohol, which actually derives from the 21st Amendment. I'd like to call to your attention that in the case of LeClaire versus Natural Resources Board, which is reported at 168 Wisconsin 2nd, 227, and it's also reported at 483 Northwest 2nd, 278. It's a 1992 case. The issue before the court was whether or not revisions to fishing permits, fishing licenses granted by the DNR, which greatly reduced the take of the fish by comparison to what the fishermen had previously been able to catch, operated as an unconstitutional taking. I would note that at page 237, 238 of the Wisconsin Report's opinion, the court states very plainly that there is no property right in a police power grant. It's a theoretical grant. So where is the end? I think the answer is that it's not a non-renewal unless it does what the statutes say, which is it deprives a licensee of the authority to sell alcohol beverages. In making that position, I'm standing squarely on the notion that the legislature delegated to a political body, and that's not a bad word, that's how our government works, the authority to make these decisions, to balance the interests of the public and the licensee in having a smooth and harmonious operation. I would state that since we're talking about rights that flow from the police power, you only have a deprivation triggering a a right to a hearing if you're by doing the action, changing the scope of the license, you are depriving the licensee of a legitimate investment-backed expectation or something already
doesn't
in use.
Doesn't that do that here if you limit the 8 acres to one building?
Well, the problem is that Wisconsin Dells did not respond to the notices. Mr. Beckler can contend that perhaps we should have served a summons on them, but they didn't show up and they didn't participate in the hearing, and there's nothing in the record documenting that they had investment-backed expectations. They own the property, but the only investment-backed expectation they had, if you want to look at it that way, was the existing tavern. What they wanted was the right unilaterally to expand the service area. And there is no legally protectable interest in that.
So what hearing are you referring to that they failed to show up?
They didn't come to the town. It really wasn't a hearing. I should say the town board's meeting, because it's our contention that this is a legislative type action, not like a contested case hearing where you have to hold an evidentiary
hearing. This was the town board meeting that, if my recollection is correct, was held after a new town clerk was hired. The town clerk brings to the attention of the board something along the lines of, there are several licenses that have been issued in the past which might not describe with particularity the premises to be licensed, so therefore the town best consider these at a meeting.
Correct. There were two premises that were not specific enough, and there were several other licenses that had various problems that were of a clerical nature. To assert that, as Mr. Beckler does, that you can never change a license unless the defect or the problem arises to the level of constituting proof for suspension or revocation, I submit would be a very dangerous rule, a very dangerous rule indeed, because what the message that would send to communities is that there's no calling taverns in which have problems, counseling them and inducing them or ordering them to change their operating hours, to start weapon screening, or to take other actions that municipalities take. This is not a static process, and that's the thing that I think is lost in analyzing this as if it were.
I guess, counsel, I'm having trouble following your argument about misconduct. If the town is not alleging any misconduct here, and I suppose one of the ways a town would compel a business to attend in that, if they didn't see it as self-evident, to be self-interested to do so, would be to say, hey, you can either participate with us now, or we're going to start a non-renewal proceeding where we're going to prove these problems, and then we're going to take away your license.
Yeah, and there's no dispute that the facts involved in this case were not the basis for a non-renewal proceeding and wouldn't have formed the basis for a non-renewal proceeding. The issue is whether or not it's a legislative determination to non-renew. I submit that the provisions in Chapter 125, which provide for a cause-based non-renewal, are simply a legislative remedy that was afforded to the tavern industry at the behest of the Tavern League to assure that they would not arbitrarily be deprived of their license. That doesn't create property. To put it another way, not all, you know, I think I've said it as all property rights are entitled to a hearing before termination, but not all hearing rights create property in and of themselves. In this case, the law in Wisconsin couldn't be clearer that alcohol licenses are privileges. They are given to licensees and, in fact, to the municipalities at the discretion of the state legislature. There are 31 states where there are no local licensees. There are states where you go to buy your booze from the state liquor store because of the way prohibition has passed on to us. My point is that the town of Del Prairie, as part of its renewal process, does have the right to say, we're going to renew you, but we want to change things a little bit in the interest of the circumstances that apply now. And the circumstances that apply now are, this town board was concerned that this tavern not expand unilaterally without giving the town involvement in that process.
Counselor, wouldn't there be permits required if they were going to build new buildings from some other part of the town, a building permit and stuff, so the town could mm-hmm. still look at it. And I would imagine there's zoning ordinances that apply out there. This, the Dalles is right next to Chula Vista, right? Right on the same side of Highway 13. Yeah, I was just out there at a meeting about a month ago. But, I mean, the town can regulate what they're doing there without having to do it through a liquor license adjustment, can't they?
There are different layers for different uses. The problem with relying on building and zoning is there may be buildings that are, and there are buildings there that exist, and the theory that the Dalles is advocating allows them unilaterally to suddenly start serving liquor in every one of the units in the motels there without asking for the board's involvement. Now, the board may well say, sure, you can have 8 acres. We talked about golf courses. Again, if the premise description says in the case of a golf course, you know, you're going to serve in the clubhouse and there will be cart service by people who go out offering a Long Island iced tea or whatever as you're out on the links, that's fine. But what those don't address is the situation where you're licensed just for a clubhouse and suddenly you want to unilaterally start hawking liquor out on the golf course without making any accommodation with the municipality about how you're going to do it. Under Wisconsin law, in order to sell liquor from a licensed establishment, you need only have one owner or a licensed operator there, no matter how large the premises are. Beyond that, it's up to the local municipality to fill in the details. I come back to this point, that the sale of alcohol is not a steady state phenomenon. It is dynamic. It comes and goes, and as the Eikenseer case shows, municipalities have had to take actions in response to problems associated with it. We are in a very uneasy truce, as it were, with the sale of alcohol. We tried prohibition and it didn't work. We've had an 80-year record now of allowing the sale of alcohol again, although it is actually illegal under federal law. It is only by the grace of state law that it is permitted at all. I don't think it is prudent or fair to anybody to say one and done. Once your license is issued, that's all you get. And I'll tell you what will happen as a result of that, because I do these meetings all the time. I know Larry does. I'm going to go in to the town board meetings or other units of government. I'm going to say, put them all on that initial license. You can always release them later. I'm going to counsel the towns to come up with every condition they can possibly imagine. And that's silly, because it isn't necessary either, because the dynamic of this is we trust local officials to make decisions on these issues. We also give bar operators, bar owners, licensees protection. We don't call their license a property right. It's a privilege. But we do say, if we're going to take it away from you, you have the right to cause an evidentiary hearing.
Well, the problem I have is you say you owner, get a statutory hearing if we take away your license. Wisconsin Dalles says, well, I'll stay with you for a moment. Therefore, when you modify the premises, you're not taking away the license and you're not renewing it. You're renewing the license with some changes, and you don't have to give any hearing, right?
Correct.
Dahl says, ooh, you got a big modification here. And in effect, you're reducing our license substantially, and you ought to give us a hearing on this, because the effect of reducing it substantially is you are not renewing the license. Renew the license means exactly the same, says Dalles. And if you don't do it exactly the same, you have the right not to do it the same, you town, but you got to follow the statute, right?
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you want, what statute would you follow, and why don't you want to follow it?
Well, the statute that is implicated in renewing renewing on different terms is simply that the statutes don't define what a renewal or a non-renewal is.
Right.
It's a plain language thing. And in turn, by virtue of the fact, I think you have to look at the broader scheme of things. There are some very specific definitions in Chapter 125. It seems pretty odd that the legislature wouldn't see fit to define so central a term if it wished that term to have a specific meaning. The fact that it doesn't, to me, is indication that along with Section 125.10, the legislature wanted to leave it up to local elected officials to define that. The outer limit of this is the outer limit of all actions taken to modify those privileges which attach under the police power, and that is that an action which divests you of all economical use of a privilege is reviewable. It's a taking under the imposition of a legal restriction analysis in the land use context, in the regulatory context. If you utterly deprive someone of their occupation, it is. But, you know, treating modifications of a license that are within the discretion of the local unit of government as a non-renewal when they don't actually deprive the licensee of anything substantive that they already have is elevating what is meant to be a legislative review into the arena of a contested case type review. And we think that the only sensible way to do that is to leave it where it belongs. Now,
so before you get to the now, comma, I would like to revisit the question that I asked of your opposing counsel. If you were to prevail, what's the narrowest grounds on which you could prevail?
I believe the narrowest grounds upon which I prevail are that a license action which allows alcohol to continue to be served in the same buildings and storage areas which it was prior to the action of the municipality is not a non-renewal, even though there may be incidental modifications to the manner in which alcohol is served. In other words, taking away the unilateral expectation of the hopes of the and non-exercised hopes of the club is not a non-renewal.
Okay, that's your conclusion. What's your analysis to get there?
Well, my analysis to get there is that the definition of license is the authority to sell alcohol beverages and or fermented malt beverages. And we said this in our brief, so I won't go too far into it, but basically the analysis is that the renewal in this instance allows Wisconsin Dells to continue to sell alcohol beverages as it did before. They didn't lose anything except an interest that we maintain isn't entitled to protection under Wisconsin law, and that is the right unilaterally to change the service area. So, I come back to the one thing the record does make clear is that there's absolutely nothing insidious here. You get a new clerk who took office and looked at these liquor licenses and in light of her training said, I think we have a problem here. You know, there's no evidence in the record that this was targeted at Wisconsin Dells because it's a strip club. In fact, the town board, I can tell you, doesn't give a whit about it being a strip club. They don't want to shut it down. They just want it to ask them for permission before they decide to expand, and they want to say in how it expands. That's not an unreasonable proposition. Essentially, it comes down to this, that under Attorney Beckler's view, the entire premises description, whether exercised or not, amounts to a vested right in perpetual non-renewal. And I think he went so far as to say that unmodifiable non-renewal, unless you cross that threshold of the causes that are found in Section 125.12 for either a revocation or a suspension. That's a pretty big discontinuity, because if you don't have the resources, and many towns and small villages and cities don't, to have an elaborate alcohol license review commission and staff and two councils to handle the due process hearings, you're challenging, you're being very challenged. I also point out that the rule Mr. Beckler is advocating, that you're a one-and-done rule, certainly wasn't the law at the time that the many tens of thousands of alcohol licenses in force in Wisconsin were issued. And you would thus be saying, sorry, no changes. And I think a lot of licensed tavern owners would say, whew.
Counsel, does the record disclose whether the town took steps to tailor the issuance of the most recent license, the 09-10, to those places, those locations where the alcohol was actually being stored or sold?
That's exactly the license that they issued.
How did it conduct that?
Well,
how did it find out?
The town board lives in the town. They drive by this property, and they have personal knowledge of the circumstances, and in writing the I'm not, by the way, saying they go to the bar. I don't know if they do or they don't, but they issued the license to say that it covered the building in which alcohol was currently being served and the storage facilities.
My concern has less to do with what bars people go to and more to do with the fact-finding procedures that we expect of municipalities.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a legislative context, the fact-finding process is not adversarial. It is not evidentiary, and it is not necessarily on the record.
Would your analysis be different if the business had made more comprehensive use of the 8 acres for the storage or sale of alcohol in the intervening 5 years?
I think it would have to be. I think that if they had actually developed a satellite bar, and I would hasten to add, I think the town's action would have been different, too, because they had no intent whatsoever of depriving Wisconsin Dells of anything that Wisconsin Dells had. As I said, they wished only to assure that any future changes would be subject to public process.
This seems to come back to the Chief Justice's original question, which she's asked at least one other time. And her first question, are there any limits on the town's ability to change the license?
Well, my answer to that is the limit of the ability to change the license is to the extent that it amounts to a de facto revocation or suspension, that it deprives the tavern owner of everything they have by way of liquor service.
But I thought you just said that the town's analysis would have been different in an effort to preserve the uses the business had made of it. So if they had made a more comprehensive use of the 8 acres, then the town would have deferred to that use in an effort. So that's a little bit different. So there are two different standards. Existing use in fact as opposed to substantial reduction, and I'm not sure I follow.
Well, those are two different questions. One was the limit to which the law would allow you to proceed. The other was what would the town have done? Okay, what the town would have done is different from what it could have done in theory. And by the way, I'll hasten to add, I don't think towns everywhere are going to reduce every liquor license to a phone booth within the tavern. Taverns are popular. People who visit taverns vote. It's a dynamic, and it's entrusting it to the political system is not a bad thing. The answer to your question, how far can you go, is to the point that you actually impose an absolute limit on the sale of alcohol, which rises to the level of a non-renewal. You could, you know, there in the land use context, there are cases like Zeeley I cited in my brief that say you can take 100% of the beneficial enjoyment of 20% or whatever of a parcel. It's not a taking. The reason I think that's important is because of the problem of trigger. You know, when is there a hearing right? If you go anything less than an absolute non-renewal, you're going to encourage a lot of certiorari reviews anytime a municipality decides to modify liquor licenses, or if you find they're not modifiable, we're in for more trouble.
Well, how does your definition fit with Alberti?
With what, I'm sorry?
The Alberti case, Alberti versus City of Whitewater.
Alberti.
1982 case.
Yes.
And it seems to me you can read in that case that it becomes a non-renewal when the town is changing a defining characteristic. of the license?
Well, the Alberti case's principal holding was that the tavern had no right to expand without participating in the public process involved in setting conditions on that expansion.
Okay.
And it's actually very consistent with what I'm saying, that the town's decision, the town's desire to limit the scope of this license to the premises that were actually being employed in the service of alcohol puts the town in the position of being able to manage the future use of this property, which was its goal. To finish answering another question, I'll just say briefly that building codes and zoning aren't going to get you there, because building codes particularly are very cut and dried. If you propose a building that meets the commercial building code, it'll be approved. You can't say, yeah, you've got all the necessary sprinkler systems and whatever, but we don't want you serving alcohol, so we're not going to give you a building permit. That's not permissible. And zoning permits a very broad brush of regulations of land uses, but once you have the zoning, you're locked into it. Zoning is a one-and-done kind of thing to a certain extent. So I guess I see my yellow light is on.
I have a question for you, though. This is a relatively small establishment, and I say relatively because I'm comparing it to its next-door neighbor, Chula Vista, which wanders all over. Doesn't your process that you would apply burden those businesses that are small and may want to expand differently from those businesses that are already large?
Those businesses that are already large have had to go through the process of explaining how they're going to properly serve alcohol on a larger area. And they've had to respond to the opportunity for the city or village or town to be engaged in putting conditions on those sales and make sure that they're done properly. I agree that believe me, I'm a small businessman. I'm much smaller than this guy. And he can buy me for lunch five times. But the point is, yes, of course we're sympathetic for small business people. And it's not like they shut them down. They told them, we want to say in how you expand. I see my light is on.
Well, you know what I hear is the difference between you and Mr. Beckler. It's that he views the change in the premise as substantial, and you view it as incidental.
That's correct.
And as long as it's an incidental modification, you say it goes. That is, the town can do it. And that this is substantial in his view, and therefore it's substantial, then it becomes not a simple incidental modification, but a non-renewal.
I think that adequately summarizes the difference between us. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Council. Mr. Beckler, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
The question before the court is not whether having an alcohol beverage license is a right or a privilege. Frankly, the Supreme Court in Graham versus Richardson expressly said that constitutional rights don't depend on that.
Well, we have cases going both ways on that issue, don't we?
Well, I would say that the essence of constitutional due process is that procedures be adopted that fairly apply, and this is Bell versus Burson, affecting license, because in this case it's an effort to restrict the right of Wisconsin Dolls to engage in its livelihood. Now, Mr. Hazelbaker takes the position that it has the unilateral right, Del Prairie does, to modify the premises of Wisconsin Dolls. But let's look into that a little more closely. This is not a situation where Wisconsin Dolls bought a building. It bought 8 acres of land. And it's not a situation where we have in the record exactly what activities took place outside of that the building. But the fact of the matter is that under Mr. Hazelbaker's argument, if Del Prairie had done the way Madison does, invited people in, made sure they understood that their rights were in jeopardy if they failed to cooperate, perhaps Del Prairie would have known that there was more to this case than just the activities going on inside that building. But of course, Del Prairie didn't give specific notice to Wisconsin Dolls, nor did it hold a due process hearing. Instead, it just assumed this was just a legislative issue and nothing else.
Counselor, would you be satisfied if it goes back down? And I mean, you're going to be up for renewal in June, so, you know, whatever happens here is going to be pretty transient. So if in June, if they wanted to say, sure, we'll give you the same description of your premises, but you can only use the liquor on this premises in certain ways, in the building you now have and maybe in one auxiliary building, without prior approval from the town.
How about in a banquet tent? How about circumstances where people are playing horseshoes? How about circumstances where people are playing volleyball or any other activities that take place outside? Since the town did not provide a pre-deprivation hearing, it didn't have the opportunity. It took the word of one person, the town chair, that there was no other activity.
June is coming up, and what I'm asking you is, you know, you're going to have to apply again, and they may have the same position they have now. And if you apply again and they do say at this meeting of the town board, we want to know everything that you're doing so we can be reasonable about what we think you ought to be doing, would that satisfy you?
Well, unfortunately, we've argued this case all the way to the Supreme Court because that wasn't done before. Certainly, it would have been great if there had been an opportunity for the licensee to present that information to the town. Let me stay further that, as we've cited in the briefs, the fact that the actual extent of licensed premises use has been decided in cases, not in Wisconsin. The Pro Sports Bar versus City of Country Club Hills in the Seventh Circuit, Reed versus Shorewood in the Seventh Circuit, City of Evanston versus Whirl Inn in Wyoming. In each case, the court did not adopt the rule that Mr. Hazelbaker suggests to the court that it's just a legislative decision. It recognized that reducing hours or reducing areas where alcohol can be served implicates significant, and I submit, constitutional interests of the licensee to continue to act.
Counsel, your premises is 8 acres, but your argument would apply to that the address in and of itself is sufficient would apply to 40 acres or 80 acres or a couple hundred acres. Isn't that correct?
It could, in theory, if the local government at the time of initial application said that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
so,
that, of course, isn't the case here.
Yeah, but that's as long as the address is given, regardless of size of the parcel, and it's approved once, that's it for you.
The town had every opportunity to inquire what was going to be done. We don't have a record that says what the Del Prairie Town Board did at the time of initial licensure. Perhaps it did review all of those things. I don't know. I assume it did its job. And certainly a campground, there could be large parcels where sales would be permitted in larger areas. Again, that's not the case here. Mr. Hazelbaker has made an interesting statement. He talked about...
Counsel, your red light's on, so if you would just summarize very quickly, we'd appreciate that.
I will save the court from the agony of listening to it. Thank you.
Well, you know the old rule, you don't stand between the court and lunch. So with that, we'll thank you both for your arguments today on licensure. And so ends 10 AP 2900, Wisconsin Dolls versus Town of Del Prairie. The court will reconvene at 1:30 for its third case today. We are in recess.